Tangential Convergence is yet another Thunderbird 6 podcast.
Okay, it's okay. I got some sci-fi references.
Okay. All right. So we are back. It's number 26. It technically is a dark and stormy night here in Sault Ste. Marie.
Yes.
There are winds that are gusting to, I'd say easily 100 kilometers an hour, seriously.
Yeah, they were reporting 90 kilometers for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it felt like I was back in Corner Brook, Newfoundland.
Right.
I almost got blown over today, literally.
Yeah, it's like those movies.
Walking home with John, and I'm holding his hand, and he said, "It's very windy." And I said, "Oh, I know." And the wind came up, and I grabbed him as it was just about knock him over, and then it was enough of a gust that almost knocked me over. I'm a bigger sail, of course.
Yeah.
And it's been, and yesterday it was like what? Or 2 days
ago.
It was
beautiful.
2 days ago it was 8 and sunny.
Yeah.
And now it's like -7 with a wind chill of like -30. So yeah. It's.
Yes, with whiteout conditions periodically. So.
Which makes you think really a lot about Egypt.
Absolutely.
It does, because of the you know, you imagine Lawrence of Arabia and the sand blowing in the wind, except here it's snow.
Yeah. That's right. It stings, though, just like the sand.
Just like the sand, yes.
Just like the,
and it's white,
jack boot of authoritarian rule.
It's
sweet sting of freedom.
Sweet sting of freedom. If you want to imagine the history, the future of man, imagine a boot on a man's throat.
That's
1984.
Mm.
Good book.
Great book, yeah. Not as good as We by Zamyatin, but...
I was quite taken with the romantic plot in it, actually.
Really, it's a romp. It's a farce.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, kids, the whiskey tonight, by the way, is Canadian Club.
Yeah, you're going to see there.
But it's their aged in a sherry cask.
Oh, look, I'll try some of that later.
Yeah, and it does taste like it has been aged in a sherry cask.
How can you tell at this point?
Oh, I can tell.
Okay, I was going to say, is your palate wrecked after having... Oh, you didn't have that much. Okay, sorry.
But the problem with it is it's kind of sweet.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay, well, yeah, I'll try that out in a little bit.
Yeah, it's more like they added sherry to it than ancient sherry.
You just added icing sugar to it.
Yeah, exactly.
Icing sugar and red food color. It's like, what's that movie? And Mr. Roberts. Is it Mr. Roberts, the movie when, is it Henry Fonda? And he's trying
Jack Lemmon, yeah.
And he's trying to make scotch for the girl that he's going to go meet. And of course, but it's, so they get rubbing alcohol and they put... iodine in it to make it the right color.
Right,
and it
the brown.
Kind of peaty, and then they put some charcoal in it to give it the smoky flavor.
All I remember with that movie is Jack Lemmon bursting out of a laundry covered in suds, and I can't remember what he says to Henry Fonda, but it's really funny. And
sure, that wasn't Petticoat Junction?
Nope, that is Mr. Roberts. Jack Lemmon's.
It certainly wasn't Petticoat Junction.
Jack Lemmon's first role, and he's awesome.
Jack Lemmon.
And he's the guy, after Mr. Roberts is killed, he's the guy who takes up his place and starts...
spoiler alert.
No.
Sorry.
It's a 65-year-old movie, but spoiler alert. Anyway.
My apologies, everyone.
We've been, of course, like everybody else in the world, transfixed.
That's right. And safely following the turmoil in Egypt from, across the Atlantic.
Exactly. And I guess it all started in Tunisia, right? And that was, about a month and a half ago? There were basically food riots to begin with. Food protests, because the price of cooking oil and flour was going up, skyrocketing.
A guy had his cart...
and there was this.
Impounded.
Yes.
And let him, self-immolation.
Let him self fire.
Yeah. And then all hell broke loose.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they, basically people took it to the streets like they used to do in the 60s. And,
and hey, it worked out kind
of. Well, in Tunisia, it didn't take long. The government collapsed pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And then another government took over, which collapsed in about 12 hours. They had a great, on SNL, they had a great thing on Weekend Update. They were showing Tunisian election commercials. And it said, "Are you better off than you were 3 hours ago?" And it was amazing watching that, because the social media angle of this was watching on Twitter and people in Tunis posting on Twitter about where police were and where snipers were. Stay away from certain areas. It was an incredible thing that they had these hashtags and you could search it and watch it, right?
Yeah.
And then, of course, it spread to Egypt.
Which, and of course, so I was watching last night on CNN. It was it Bahrain or Dubai?
Bahrain. And Libya.
Things are getting Libya.
Yeah, Muammar.
Well, Muammar was upset because he said the people of Egypt had made a great mistake, that Mubarak was a great man and great for Egypt.
So are the Saudis. Yeah. Who are you going to believe?
There was apparently a poll done in, now I don't know the veracity of this, but it was by Matthew Ingram from GigaOM posted a thing on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And he's usually pretty reasonable. And there was a poll done, an actual scientific poll done in Egypt, and 60% of the people polled said that the WikiLeaks cables, to tie it into the last episode, mm-hmm. played a role in mm-hmm. their
sure.
final mistrust of the government.
Mm. Sure.
So Julian the Creep Assange.
Creme de la scum Assange.
Yeah, nonetheless. But I mean, the thing that got me about it was that, you know, Isabel and I were talking about this when it was going on, and I like to hope I'd do that.
Mm-hmm.
I like to think I'd do that in the situation. I don't know if I would, though. Of course, you never know, but
yeah,
there's some real bravery shown there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like when you saw the guy at Tiananmen Square standing for the tank.
Yeah.
Like I like to think I'd be that cool,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know that I could be that cool.
I don't think I could be that cool either. And I mean, I don't know.
And I mean, when I say cool, I mean cool like awesome, but also that cool under pressure. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'm not just saying awesome, man. I'm going to be on a T-shirt. You know.
I don't know.
They had the Google executive on interviewed on CNN. Who helped set some of this stuff up on Facebook, some of the protests.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was saying that he wanted to meet Mark Zuckerberg and thank him for his help in overthrowing Hosni Mubarak.
Nice.
Which is pretty awesome.
It is awesome. I mean, I guess, whenever I approach our episodes and, you know, my training is as a historian, even though I do computers now, you know, my first instinct is to look at the historical record for whatever.
Sure.
And, you know, I mean, looking at the historical record. All right, so Hosni backed down. He's 84 years old. He's tired. And he wants to die in Egypt. He doesn't want to be exiled like Idi Amin. Mm. So he backed off. The country is still under the control of his minions, the military. And they're playing all the cards the military always plays and all of these things. You know, yeah, democracy right around the corner. We just need to establish law and order
mm-hmm.
so that, you know, the guy in Pakistan's been playing that card for 10 years. And, you know, yeah, whatever.
That's a fear. I actually do think that while the people running the army are his minions
mm-hmm.
and the colonels as well, you know, mm-hmm. I think when you get down to captains and lieutenants, even if sure. they are trained military officers, mm-hmm. I doubt that they have a whole lot of allegiance to the old regime.
True.
I think they have allegiance a lot more to, because they're young guys. They're not 30 guys. Mm-hmm. They're captains and lieutenants. So I think mm-hmm. they'd have more allegiance to the people, right? And the average conscript soldier is clearly with the people because he doesn't, you know, he's one of them.
Yeah,
he's in the army. Either he's conscripted or, because I think they have conscription there.
Yeah.
Or he joined up and he did it because he needed a job.
Mm.
And he needed 3 square meals a day, you know. So, I'm not that. I'm optimistic about this. I think that, you know, you'll see. I imagine they have to rewrite their constitution. I mean, I think they're going to have a constituent assembly or something. And we all know how well that went in Russia.
Well, that's the thing, right? Exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's the thing, right? I mean, so a tired old man backed down. That doesn't, to me, that's not a huge endorsement for the power of the people.
I don't know. I think but he wanted to stay.
Yeah.
Well, he did, but I mean, he's also 84 years old, and, you know, the for me, the thing that resonates most in his statements when he backed down was, you know, he was really insistent, I'm not going to die outside of Egypt. And I think that's what he wants. He wants to stay there. He doesn't want to be lynched by mob. But at the same time, he's an Egyptian. He's a proud Egyptian, and he wants to stay there.
But I think he might end up dying as an Egyptian in an Egyptian prison cell after a new government
could
takes
be.
Over
could
and gets
be.
Dry.
It could be. But
I kind of hope, actually.
Well, yeah.
I'm not saying death penalty. I'm saying I'd like him to rot in a prison.
Yeah, I have no love of dictators. And I can say that. I mean, I lived in a place for 3 years, and my boss got arrested by the secret police, and it was scary. And
any place with a secret police is scary.
It is.
Any place where the police actually have to be secret.
Police is the problem.
Yeah,
Isabel's right. The police are the problem, not the army.
There seems to be a real fissure between the army, which seems to have a fair amount of contacts and funding and doctrine from the Americans.
Yeah.
And the secret police, which are a completely different animal. And I think, you know, there's a conjunction between the release of information in WikiLeaks. There's a bit of a conjunction in, or convergence, convergence.
Good callback, thank you.
Convergence with, if you've got a lot of people that are going abroad being trained, they're exposed to different systems, or exposed to different ways of life.
Yeah.
And then you've got this technology that allows, you know, people to say, no, we gotta keep coming out to the square. Right, we gotta keep coming out, and now we gotta do this, and now we gotta do that, and also maintaining it in the other cities, because it just wasn't Cairo, it was the other cities as well.
It was Alexandria, it was Memphis. Well, it was Memphis, I think, too. Yeah,
but in terms of
Tennessee, I mean,
they were upset. The other Memphis,
Cairo, Cairo,
big cowboy hats and bad music.
Alexandria, Mississippi, they were upset there as well. Mostly it was teabaggers there, but it's a whole other thing.
But you say about, all right, you talk about staying out in the square, and, you know, when I was looking at those things, I was thinking about Tiananmen Square.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, where, who couldn't, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Where they stayed there for over 2 months.
Yeah.
And,
I mean, ultimately.
They, over 2 months, hundreds of thousands of protesters, they had the students on their side, they even had a good portion of the government on their side.
And the military.
Yeah. And they had all of that. They had the international press on their side, hunger strikes, the works.
They had every the leader of the Soviet Union on their side.
Yeah, exactly.
Gorbachev. They were chanting, Gorby.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know what? It didn't matter. Because at the end of the day, it wasn't a tired 84-year-old man at the helm.
That's true. I mean,
it was a guy willing to go the distance.
It's an apparatus. And the other thing was, China's a bigger country. So they did not use... the troops that crushed the Tiananmen Square massacre
were
people from cities.
Yeah. Sure. Of course,
you know,
they were able to play regional differences.
Yeah, I guess
it's a little harder in Egypt, which is much more. Though there are some north south apparently differences, but it's not the same.
Yeah, I guess my point is that when you protest, if you're a peaceful protester, you know, and you can do everything right, you can bring your A game.
Mm-hmm.
But your A game, no matter how much effort you put into it, even to the point of sacrificing your life in a hunger strike, is only 50% of the equation.
Yeah.
The other 50% is the other guy and what he can bring. And if his 100% is more than your 100%, you bring your A game and he brings his A++ game, you're fucked.
It's the difference between Louis the 16th giving in, getting his head cut off, and
he gave in because the army wouldn't stand by him.
That's right.
But he couldn't bring his A game, right?
Yeah,
so he lost.
He
brought his C minus game,
and he can. I think, you know, reading over the accounts, he almost convinced himself. I mean, I think the army.
They abandoned him
because he clearly wasn't going to do anything. But then, you know, not that long afterwards, you get a whiff of grape shot to save the directory, and...
I know. I mean, Napoleon, people like Napoleon, right?
Yeah, exactly.
They liked him, but he's a violent bastard. He's a dictator in every sense that Hosni Mubarak is a dictator.
I guess what I was sort of driving at was that you see this sort of wave of protests erupting from country to country to country.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some good things, as we said, with globalization, sharing of information, knowledge, exposure to different ways of life. But ultimately, all it can be is sort of an input, I guess, at the end of the day, because it does depend on, you know, people making choices. And if a regime is not going to back down, is willing to, you know, wade through streets of blood, mm-hmm. that they're going to do it.
Well, which looks like what's happening in Bahrain.
Yeah.
Right.
The government's just like, fuck you.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and on that point, Scott Carpenter, who used to be a White House analyst for Middle East affairs, saw him in an interview, and know, they're talking about this issue, you know, what's going on in the Middle East, and he said, well, you know, the two wobbly domino pieces are Jordan and Algeria. And so the journalist said, so you're expecting Jordan and Algeria to collapse? And he said, well, maybe Jordan. And then he just off the cuff just said, but in Algeria, the security forces shoot back. So I don't think that they'll, you know, things aren't going to go the way the protesters are, because, you know, they don't mind killing people there.
Well, and Algeria, of course, is born out of a...
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, a huge civil war with this massive French connection that it's just insane. Going back to earlier things that you were talking about France being a superpower.
Before we started recording, that
conflict almost causes the overthrow of the French government by its own armed forces.
That's exactly. Right. Yeah. You
know, a good Western liberal democracy almost gets overthrown and becomes Vichy France again.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, a bunch of paratroopers.
Exactly.
And, to quote the Saturday Night Live, Amy Poehler, the night that of the... elections that saw the end of Donald Rumsfeld and the creation of a Democratic Congress, on her weekend update, she started off by saying, and this is awesome, she just looked in the camera and said, well, tonight the Republic of Iraq has instigated a regime change in the United States of America.
That's pretty much true, too.
It's totally true.
And it's interesting.
Good for her.
When you look at the... I mean, and I think the other thing is, because we were all old enough to have watched what happened in the early 90s, late 80s, I remember when I first moved to Toronto, and they were having a Congress of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union, and one of my roommates, Mark, and I were obsessed with this thing. We were following, we would go out and buy the Globe and Mail at midnight to see what had happened, because this was before, I don't think we even got CNN on Canadian television yet then. Mm-hmm. So, and we were a bunch of poor students, so I don't think we had...
I think
we didn't have cable till I officially moved in. I said, we don't have cable?
Ted Turner actually was the host 24 hours a day at that time.
That's right. And it was just like, it was actually a news channel, not just a random bunch of yelling. Actually, CNN's not that bad that way.
It does have its yellers.
It has its yellers, but for the most part, it's not, it's the...
But they got rid of Rick Sanchez, so...
They got rid of Rick Sanchez.
And Glenn Beck.
That's right.
Oh,
I know.
Hey.
Thank God, Robin crosses himself.
Yeah. Well, they got
protect himself.
They got rid of Rick Sanchez because he's an anti-Semite.
The dirty Sanchez.
Oh, yeah, he's a dirty Sanchez, yeah. Oh, yeah, he said that the Jews ran the news industry and all kinds of other just... It was pretty offensive.
Yeah.
It was pretty offensive. And anyway, so we were watching this, and it was like, and then, you know, you pick up the Globe and Mail. We literally go at it midnight. Now, we probably were already...
What's the Globe and Mail?
Yeah, it was one of these newspapers they used to be called. We'd be drinking at a bar, and we'd run out, and we'd find the guy that would be standing at the corner of, like, Bathurst and Bloor going, buy a Globe! Buy a Globe! Remember that guy, Isabel?
Yeah.
And,
Buy a Globe,
Weekend Globe. And we get the newspaper, we'd be like, Gorbachev calls for free elections in Soviet Union. We go, what planet are we living on? And it was like, it was really weird. And then what happens, of course, is, you know, we get Poland, where Solidarity ends up having talks with Jaruzelski, which is the weirdest thing. That great big, ever seen that picture of the round table talk? There's like 8,000 people around a table. There's got to be a Polish joke in there somewhere. And and then they set up this election system where there are seats that are reserved for the Communist Party, but they have to get at least 20% of the vote, and like none of the only one guy actually ended up getting elected, and he was a Solidarity sweep. It was like
Frank fell McKenna. Apart in like 2 seconds.
It was like Frank McKenna winning elections in New Brunswick. It's like, well, I'm going to point you guys to the opposition benches because we won all the seats. And then, you know, Hungary goes, and then the Czechoslovakia opens.
The color revolutions.
The color revolutions, right?
Yeah.
And you didn't see that coming. And it was all peaceful except for Romania.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you didn't see it coming. And then you also thought, oh, this is going to end. Oh, this is going to end. Oh, eventually.
Yeah.
And then I remember seeing the freaking Berlin Wall fall.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I mean, that's ingrained, that's one of those flashbulb memories. I know exactly what I was doing.
Yeah, exactly. Me too.
And I'm thinking maybe, I'm hoping, maybe that's what this is. You know, that maybe, I said to Isabel when we were out grocery shopping today, I said, you know, maybe, wouldn't it be great if in 10 years, there was a real Western liberal democracy in the Arab world? Wouldn't that be the weirdest, awesomest, greatest thing for world peace ever?
Now there might be a whole slew of them.
And yeah, Isabel with the, it'll never happen, I've been over there, they're all nuts.
Well,
no, that's not what she said. I'm putting words in her mouth.
I kind of concur, though. It's like, a long stretch.
They like...
Democracy is one thing. A liberal democracy? Yeah. Whoa, whoa, whoa. If I was in Israel right now and seeing these protests and, you know, the joy of democracy arriving in Egypt, I'd be sweating. I'd be afraid.
What were you saying, Isabel? You said...
They just like big guys. They
machismo, like huh? Yeah. Stick your chest out, pound on it. Rah! That's what...
Have a giant tongue. Holds in your barks, tongue's too big for his mouth. Next time you see him talk,
One of the biggest mistakes I made, when I was in Africa, I was sort of the project manager / operations manager for an ISP there, all staffed by local Africans, and the biggest mistake I made was trying to be an enlightened new age guy with these guys, because they just interpreted that as weakness.
Yeah.
Right, they wanted me to just stand up there and tell them what to do, and when they challenged me, they expected me to slap them down, and it took me about a year to figure out that that's how it had to be, and because of course it runs against my nature, but the thing is that's how they're educated, that's what they respect. They don't respect the sensitive. Let's all talk about it. Let's get together and talk sort of thing.
Ironic that people in Africa wouldn't expect the word kumbaya.
No.
Yeah. I thought that was a Native American expression.
It probably is, but it sounds African somehow.
But
Swahili.
There will be coffee and donuts.
In Rwanda, because they lost so many men after the war, and there were so many orphans, they've had to change their mentality, and they've had to accommodate women, and now women are into the...
Mm-hmm. The chest pound?
Decision making.
When I was in Africa, give it a go. It's very sweet though, so.
Oh, is it ever? Yeah, it's caramelly.
Perfect word for it. In Gambia too, because they're Muslims, they. Everybody. The like Canadian club has played havoc with my mind. I forget that. Let's just move on.
But, okay, we'll move
Women are in the army, women are in the police there, and it has to do with Islam, and I cannot remember how that connection worked, because you would think the exact opposite, which is what I was thinking when I first got there. And then it was explained, and it's a long roundabout way where, when I was detained, one of the times... The first time I was detained, it was a woman who detained me.
You don't mean the times here?
No.
I detain him every day at work.
Yes. I bet she was tough.
She was having her hair done while she detained me, which was really unnerving.
That seems horribly intimidating.
It's like a doctor.
She was just lying on a couch. Yeah, she was lying on the couch having her hair done in the police station, and it was really scary.
It was like she was just toying with you.
Yeah.
It was really scary.
Ooh, it's smooth though.
It is smooth. Yeah, it's not at all a bad thing to drink.
I think the police that hit that guy who was selling vegetables.
Yep.
That was a woman.
Yep, and that was part of it, that he was so upset that he was being beaten up by a woman. So that also didn't help, you know, because women being inferior to men. But
well,
it's a
democracy
joke.
Goes.
So sexism helps democracy.
Yeah. There you go.
And that's it. Thanks, folks.
It's so funny, though, because most of the people who protest in North America, people who are like what we call quote-unquote tree huggers, the people out there trying to fight the man, they're all doing it on the basis of anti-democratic stuff. Human rights is not democratic. Democratic says if the members of the community decide that Jews all need to get lynched, we lynched them.
No, I don't think that's true. That's mob rule. That's a difference.
No, but the
democracy respects the rights of the minority.
No, but that's an anti-democratic injection into our concept of modern liberal democracy. Rhode Island was the one who came up with it when the Americans were trying to ratify their constitution.
I'm saying that, but that's what democracy is. That's why I said liberal
democracy. Nowadays, that's how we see it.
I'm not talking about mob rule. Mob rule is an entirely different thing.
Right.
One could argue that in the early days of the Soviet Union... that they had, after a little while, after the Civil War was over, there probably was some popular support. There was popular support in a lot of areas. But that's mob rule. There's a difference between mob rule. And it's the rule of law is the other thing.
Right. And that, yeah, exactly. I mean,
the rule of law, and that's what Gorbachev brought into the Soviet Union even before there was any anything close to democracy. He actually said that...
I concur.
There is rule of law here.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a constitution that we must follow. Because like in
you know, we've had it for 7 years, and we haven't really followed it because it's been party rule, but...
That's right.
Exactly.
Well, no, because there was the article that said the party is the vanguard of the revolution, and that's going to trump everything.
Yeah.
Right.
Even if there was ever a... which there never was, but an independence, you know, court in the Soviet Union.
Yeah, and...
You know.
Going back, like, my point going back to what Isabel is saying, and where I'm concurring with her, is that, yeah, they want democracy. And this is why I also think if you're an Israeli right now, you're afraid...
Because democracy can break down into mob rule.
It can't.
Well, but because there's a difference between democracy and democracy held in check. Like liberal democracy, what we have here is a combination of democracy held in check with things like rights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, when the Americans tried to form their constitution, they had to go around to all the states and get it ratified in every single state. And Rhode Island said, no way. No way.
Well, they needed to be, I believe, 9 of the 13.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well,
it was some sort of super majority. Again, but anyway, I understand.
My mind has... each state had to ratify it. Who wanted to join?
I'm looking it up.
Okay. Cool.
Keep talking.
But anyway, but the point is, so they showed up in Rhode Island, which would have been the smallest state of all the states.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, according to the Madison Plan... You know, it would be possible for all the other states to say, well, no Rhode Island fishermen get to fish. And we'd have no say against that.
Right.
Because we can never win, because we'll always, by population in the House, be the smallest group in the House. And you need the House
until
and the Senate.
Until we let Wyoming in 150 years.
Right. And But the Senate can stop it, but can't represent our interests. Because the Senate is where... In Madison Plan,
it's
gets
nine.
Equalized.
It's
right?
nine. It
nine.
Nine.
Okay.
And Pennsylvania was the keystone state because it was the... And the first one was Delaware.
Right.
And I think it says that on their license plates or something.
But the point was, Rhode Island said, you know, being a small state, true democracy, this constitution as defined by Madison and the Constitutional Convention, will always mean we're screwed because we're a minority. And they said, we need 10 changes. And those 10 changes became the first...
Bill of Rights.
Yeah. Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments to the Madison's Constitution.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And those have become the Bill of Rights. And they basically define, or basically say that, even if the democracy says, even if the community says, everybody in Rhode Island has to stick their head in the guillotine, you know, there are 10 rights that cannot be changed. They're universal and unmutable. And
unless the Constitution's changed.
Well, but you can't. But that's a big thing in the states. You can only add an amendment. You can't delete an old amendment.
You know, but there are amendments that have was
taken out the previous amendment.
Prohibition amendment.
Right.
Yeah. 51.
You can add an amendment that tries to nullify an old amendment, but you can't remove an amendment, and you cannot remove the first 10. That's why they're considered that first 10 the Bill of Rights.
But I mean, the thing that's important here is that I think that, I agree some of what you're saying.
Did you see
a great course you just gave?
I have to say, having gone to university with Robin, it's a pleasure to see that none of those history courses were wasted, because...
I love American history. Yes.
American history's great.
I've got flashbacks of Professor Simpson right now. Right.
Well, so, folks...
I have flashbacks of Professor Pospielowski daily.
You knew that guy?
I took a course from him.
Oh, well.
And Jack Hyatt?
Welcome. You're a member.
Had I ever told the registrar at Western how many history courses I took, I'd have a minor in history. I just never got around to it. It just never appealed to me. I loved history. I took, I have 24 credits in history. Well, not at Western. You know, it doesn't work that way.
That's right. I know. It's 0.5 or 1.
I think that the important thing, though, is I agree with a lot of what you're saying. I have a concern that way. But I don't think the average Egyptian, or as the Latin would call him, Aegypti, would say...
Nice.
Well done.
Would say...
Dave plus plus.
I think their...
Who's that?
Their biggest concerns...
That's Ken?
Who's that?
It's Doogie Howser.
Oh my god.
It's a good
actually, that's not bad, hon.
Yeah, you're doing
that's the album art for the
show. I've got some books you might want to borrow. They're sort of graphic novel short stories
about
called
Ken?
Flight.
About Ken.
Yes, Ken's
as a
in one.
Yes.
And they're really, really amazing
to look
at.
The audio version is there's no video.
I mean, if you're really visually inclined, like, I love them because, you know, I look out the window and I see the Sioux, but I can look at these and this is like, each story is like, because each one's done by a different author, they're just like, wow. It's just like a totally different visual experience. They're called Flight. That's a call out, everybody. Flight. Pick them up. There's volumes 1 through 6, as far as I know.
And since we're calling things out, Alistair Horn, Savage War of Peace, about the conflict in Algeria.
Yeah. See, if we had a sponsor, like, say, Audible.com,
exactly.
We could right now tell people to download that and go to audible.com/tangentialconvergence.
I actually have that one for my iPod, and it's a great recording.
And if we're doing other call-outs, I just have to say, because this has been on my mind for a while, but if you're into this kind of social media stuff and these kinds of issues, NPR On the Media. Great show.
Is it good?
It's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, liberal drivel. Jesus.
No. Hardcore journalists talking about
social media. Hardcore journalists with a liberal agenda.
Oh my God.
Just kidding.
Everybody, the sound you're about to hear next is Ken's head being bashed.
The funny thing is, you know, we all have, I mean, in Canada...
Sorry, comrades.
If this was the States, we'd all be...
Now we see the violence inherent in the system.
See,
you're saying the Communist Party died in this country.
If we were all in the States, no matter what our politics are here, we'd all still be on the left wing of the Democratic
Party.
And the situation is such in Canada, there's no one to vote for anyway. So
that's right.
On the Media, folks. Check it out and make your own decision.
What are you doing? Taglines for them now?
Yes.
Okay.
Good show.
I was trying to... I mean, historically, revolutions... You were talking about the French Revolution.
Mm-hmm. The attempted revolution against the Directory, and Napoleon put that down.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Had a coup.
The glorious revolution.
The glorious, indeed.
Not much of a revolution.
Well, it wasn't as bloody as it could have been.
No.
That was a revolution with a rubber stamp. Okay.
Yeah.
It's like everybody was like, okay, someone's just got to do it.
Oh, let's get
some Dutch guy to do it.
Steve Pincus is going to be all over you.
Ooh-wee. Well, I'm right here.
Steve. But I mean, I think about. One of the this makes me
black
cat
blackbackpack.net, my
friend.
When you think, I love your URL. When you think of I was trying to think of this sort of from a sci-fi angle, and thinking, of course, about Star Trek, because I'm a bit of a Star Trek fan and a bit of a Star
no
Trek
way,
fan.
Man.
I never
would have guessed.
Yeah. And
what you think of? Well, wait, no, that's Star Wars.
Well, and I'm not a Star Wars fan. But I mean, I was thinking of how this all the Prime Directive is something that does not work. Like, according to the Prime Directive,
mm-hmm.
it's the most isolationist bullshit attitude. If the Prime Directive was in the United States, wait a second, it was.
Yes.
Which is why they never got involved in World War II until they, while the rest of us were fighting
or World War
fascism.
Yeah.
You know, it's that kind of thing where it always kind of bugged me, the Prime Directive.
Talk, brother, talk.
And I think that, there's an idea that, and it fits in, when we were talking about this in my contemporary theory and psychology class, there's this wonderful thing about our democracy, and that's that we have equality. We've also taken it to a point where all ideas are equal and we should listen to everything and everything, and that's bullshit.
I don't listen to anything anymore.
No, nor do I. My students don't listen to me. They just parts of the brain, they got that, after that, mostly after
Speak
that.
Brother.
Just on Facebook anyways in your class.
Mostly after that, it's just me ranting about stories.
All opinions
about school,
are
anyway.
Not something that needs to be listened to.
That's right. But the thing is, the Prime Directive says all opinions should be listened to, even if they don't like them. And they clearly are disdainful of some ideas.
Mm.
It's a very Western liberal kind of show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Right.
It's
from the 60s.
And the Federation Constitution, from the little bit we know about it, is a Western liberal document.
Right.
But, except
the Kennedy era as the new frontier era, right?
Sure. Well done, Ken. Nice segue.
We choose to go to the moon and these other things,
not because
they're
easy. Because I can get a lot of tail by doing this.
We choose to fight zombies not because it is easy, but because it is hard.
So Ken gets the Segway of the Night award, which is my personal award that I'm...
just made up.
I've never given out, and I will do that again.
From now on,
and it actually segued into nothing, unless we're going to start talking about the
Which is why he got the Segway of the Night award.
So it's an ironic award.
It is. Well, it's, can you take something in, important and...
Trivialize it to somehow make it about naked Marilyn Monroe.
Exactly. Oh. That's it. That's the award, people. I just decided that right now.
Just a second. Let's all just... Okay, we're back.
Okay, But Roddenberry's idea behind the Prime Directive and the whole idea of Star Trek is a reflection of Kennedy's new frontier...
Well, it's interesting because in the 60s, that whole attitude where, you know, the Peace Corps and all that stuff go out there and make a difference, whereas the Prime Directive seems to be the exact opposite. Don't go out there and make a difference. Go out there and monitor and make sure nobody interferes with you, or you don't interfere with them until they're at a level of understanding.
Well, the cool thing is Captain Kirk would break the Prime Directive constantly.
Right, exactly.
Because Kirk was the classic...
cowboy.
He was
a Peace Corps guy.
He was Horatio Hornblower, right?
Yeah.
He was, it was a Prime Directive, but on the other hand, I find your ways abhorrent and ridiculous.
Charles Beard.
Who's that one? Is that Robin?
Let's see.
Clearly here.
Well, you know what, ladies and gentlemen, Isabel's been sketching us, and I insist, and I will bring my camera here, that the pictures have to be put up. That's my new headshot right there.
It's going right on Facebook.
It's going on Facebook. Damn straight it is. I want that picture taken, and that's going up on my... I'm serious. I think it looks like me.
And a complete non sequitur. We had Rick today put... We created a wiki to document stuff in the library. Mm-hmm.
I want that on my Facebook.
And we use the cover for Advanced Dungeons and Dragons Unearthed Arcana as our logo.
I like it.
Yeah.
Very few people are going to get that. That's the beauty of it.
I know.
The best jokes are, in fact, the ones that only you get.
That's right.
That picture is just bringing back so many memories. Mm-hmm. I spent so many hours of my life in the...
Looking in the mirror, admiring myself.
After using the Charles Atlas workout in the back of the comic book. No one was going to kick sand in my face
anymore.
They
are comic books. Right. They're graphic novels, man. This Archie Double Digest is a graphic novel.
I love Archie Double Digest.
But the deal was, even if he could still kick sand in my face, as long as I got that potato gun also featured in the comic book, I could shoot him with that.
Or the sea monkeys.
The sea monkeys.
You can train your sea monkeys to attack.
Sea monkeys, attack!
Yeah. I find your sea monkey way is abhorrent, ridiculous. I'm going to...
And yet erotic.
Yet I'm going to sleep with the sea monkeys. Especially the green ones. They're fascinating, don't you agree, Mr. Spock?
First rule of tangents, they all end up in sex.
No, they all end up in me doing Kevin Pollak doing William Shatner. As my students know, it almost happens on a daily basis in my classes.
Nice.
I want that on my face. Flat cap black, or... Christ.
Can't even say his own URL.
I've had a nip, my friends. Flatcatblackbackpack.net, my friends. Going live this week.
Penis and Butthead or something.
That's like, me, that's me. I looked at that.
I thought you said penis and Butthead. No, he looks like... He looks like Henrik Sedin. Let me go check on Jonathan.
That is going on my webpage. Do you have a camera? Do you have a camera right here? Is your camera?
Yeah.
Well, let's make a picture. Oh, I hear that, man. It's been a long week. So what do you think of my write-up for Project Chronicle?
I liked it. You see, I only made a few.
I feel like I'm exhibiting a ridiculous amount of hubris.
A ridiculous amount of pride?
Hubris.
Pride.
No, arrogance. I feel arrogant. And I don't like feeling arrogant.
Why?
Because the flip side of feeling arrogant is everybody shitting on your parade.
But we only do it behind your back. No, it was good. It was a good write-up. The only thing I changed was...
No, I saw.
Okay, yeah.
We added just all the projects.
The different projects underneath it. But other than that, it was... It was great. Actually, all the content you've added has been really good. I really like the description of the description of the project was excellent, and what you're and the references were good, and then the other stuff like you've added to the FAQs is really good too. Cool. I've just been doing humdrum copying and pasting the partners and stuff.
You got a blog now.
No, I'm in the
start blogging, dude. Because otherwise, a blog with no content is a waste.
The sound of the wind just woke him up. Flat track back, Mac lack, fat back.
Flat
dark,
cap.
Dark sack, Mac. Dark
fucked
Mac.
Up, flat on my back.
Dot
com.
Dot net.
Flat cap.
Flat cap.
Flat cap.
Black backpack. Dot net.
No one is ever going to type this.
I'll tell you, the SEO on that is going to be great, too.
Yeah.
If you're talking to fucking Julian Smith, you probably should fucking Google Google
access this through like Bitly or something.
Yeah, that's right.
Just shorten it.
You need to shorten. But you know, the interesting thing is Bitly. Speaking of the Middle East,
yeah,
it's a .ly. It's a Libya.
Oh, oh yeah, really? Yeah.
So like Bitly could conceivably go down when Muammar is thrown under the bus. Hopefully,
Mo.
We need lights. Jonathan's camera, right? We all have cameras and laptops. It's
yeah, okay. Sci-fi. Let's bring some sci-fi in here. I'm trying to think. Revolutions, mm-hmm. popular protests mm-hmm. in sci-fi. One comes to mind, which is
Logan's Run.
Logan's Run.
Oh, Logan's Run. Sure.
Yeah, the protest movement.
Mm-hmm. Jenny Agutter. Yeah.
Well, Goldsteinism.
My God.
Goldsteinism.
Goldsteinism.
Emmanuel Goldstein.
Well, we're going to have someone's done a movie of, Ayn Rand's The Fountainhead, or...
Okay. Oh my God.
Atlas Shrugged. Someone's finally done a movie of Atlas Shrugged.
Is it really, really long and tedious?
Probably.
Yeah, and you're not allowed to complain about anything, because then you're a lesser intellect as soon as you complain.
That's right.
Fuck you, Ayn Rand. Fuck you. And I hope everybody hears this.
Oh my God.
Everybody,
there's so many militant objectivists.
Fuck you, Ayn Rand. Anyway, moving
unless
right
you're an Ayn Rand fan that likes, that's also a member of 4chan, and we love you.
That's right.
Fuck you, Ayn Rand.
That was Black Cat Backpack.
Yeah, exactly. Come and see me on my website, because I'm dying to come and see you.
Oh, God. Okay, Robin just called out 4chan, I think, somehow. We didn't.
No, I'm on 4chan's side, but not on the Ayn Rand side. Anybody who says you're not allowed to criticize them, or use any kind of critical faculty, on their work. Anyone who says, if you apply critical faculty to me, you're a loser.
Well, you saw fuck when you. Anthony Daniels / Theodore Dalrymple did a review.
I have not read his review,
my
but
God.
I would love to
the
read his review.
It was a great review, and it was, it wasn't malicious or anything like that, and the objectivist went bananas. Like, who
good,
is this guy?
Good,
like, who
good.
Is he? He's like... he's only fairly famous.
Anybody who says you need to check
who
your critical...
Oh, yes, the argument from authority. That's excellent. That's
anyone right. who says you have to check your critical faculty out at the front door, that's no house I'm walking into.
Scientologist. But
exactly.
Or a member of the Algoma University Senate.
That's right.
But nowadays it feels like that.
Woohoo!
What I was thinking of...
We're skateboarding through the minefield now, kids.
We're riding a bulldozer through it at this point.
That's right. Maybe we could have one of them protests.
We could have a protest. There's a couple of obviously classic Heinlein novels that are about protest. Even in a certain extent, you see in Frank Herbert's Dune series where the God Emperor Leto II is in fact trying to create a situation where essentially people rebel against his rule and then go on his golden path.
Right.
You see...
Which is like the Cultural Revolution in China, right?
Yeah, lots of people die. Miserably.
In the annals of the 20th century, that is definitely humanity's lowest
point. Past murder history.
World War II is running for first. I don't know which one is worse, and I wouldn't try to... But anyway, go ahead.
A series that's come back, surprisingly, I read in the 90s, David Wingrove's series on Cheng Kuo. He calls it not a dystopian novel, but a novel, or set of novels that are, I think he used the term prodome, which is sort of a warning rather than dystopian.
Okay.
Although it is.
Yeah, because dystopia is really a satire when you come right down to it.
Yeah. And so in this future, the Chinese rule everything in giant, the planet's covered in giant 300-level cities that are made out of this indestructible plastic called ice.
Called Soylent Green.
Called Soylent Green. Well, slow. And, you know, where your status is...
It's people!
Your status is... Spoiler alert. It depends on, you know, which level you live on.
Okay.
This is so much fun.
And... But there's this whole thread through the series of these protest movements, because it's become a very feudal society. Although it's very futuristic, it's also a very hierarchical, stultified structure.
I love the symbolism of actually being higher up in a hierarchy.
Exactly, it's beautiful. Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, everything's covered over, and it's a very Neo-Confucian kind of thing.
Yeah.
But there's, you know, the Europeans, the Hung Mao, who are always, you know... just because of their nature, they can't, you know, they're resisting, you know, this order or whatever.
Okay.
And of course, there's use of various technology and sort of to break the tyranny of ice, to break the tyranny of the levels to get into space, to get beyond the reach. Mm-hmm. It's funny though. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, great memes and ideas that are used that science fiction explores, and they often revolve around, you know, what's the future of humanity? What's our future relative to the use of technology? But it seems to me that a protest and revolution is a harder thing, or is it something that perhaps science fiction hasn't captured as well as it's captured other ideas. I mean, the classic military sci-fi always deals with, you know, an external invasion or something like that.
Then
a lot of the classic hard sci-fi... deals with sort of more internal human issues of dealing with technology and what it does to us.
Right.
But sci-fi and politics
is, you don't see the political angle very often. And I mean, I think that's something. Yeah, maybe I'm not as versed as I should be.
I mean, I think it's out there. I just don't think it's as strong a concept that gets used for stories.
I think sci-fi centers around the science. It's sci-fi.
Yeah.
And so it. You know, the front and center is the science.
Yeah, it's often used, though, to explore the human condition, right?
That's right,
and
sure.
This whole protest thing that we're describing in talking about the Middle East and in other places in the past, I mean, it's the human condition. You get the things in the 19th century, like the anarchist movement and socialism and communism, mm-hmm. and they're all protest movements in some form.
And fascism is fascism.
Sure. To address the old order, and now
I think Star Trek comes closest. I mean,
yeah.
Gene Roddenberry. I mean, a lot of the original series Star Trek episodes, you know, center themselves around those kinds of human issues. I mean, a lot of the criticism of the new movie, which is an amazing movie, by the way.
It was a fun movie.
Well, I could go on for like 10 minutes about why the new movie had to be the way it was. But and people criticize it now because it wasn't dealing with quote-unquote issues. Just to give a quick summary, sidebar, everybody, sidebar, right now.
What are you, Judge Ito?
I am. Judge Judy, actually. You know, they rebooted the series. They need to make it new and interesting to get people to buy into it. But, and so...
Both of them.
Yeah, exactly. All of Israel knows this right now.
Those two guys in Israel and Tom, they know this. And Rachel.
You know, if you have a long-running... And Rebecca.
Jim and Rebecca. Texas.
If you have a long-running and a bunch of people in D.C. who don't write comments, but I know, listen, you bastards. all right, boys. You should add some comments to the damn site, you know?
Comment.
Verge.com.
That's right. Please do. I know you guys are shy because you live in D.C.
Cost me $10. We could use a little bit of a donation.
And I know you listen because you jump on me in my IMs. So please add comments and make us look better. But anyway, you know, you're running a long-running narrative. Every now and again, you have to have an admin episode where you just straighten things out.
Right.
You know, there's got to be an episode like that episode in The Next Generation where they explain... due to users complaining on the website why all alien species look like humans. We all know why they do.
But, you know...
Because it's cheaper to do it that way.
But that was a great episode. And what
did, but it's an admin episode. But it just explains...
Did it not remind you of the book Contact?
Yes. I mean, it was clearly lifted from that, I think. But it, which was a great book.
Yeah.
And, you know, not a bad movie.
It wasn't a bad movie.
When I saw that movie...
I enjoyed that movie a lot.
I went and saw it with a friend of hers and her boyfriend in Quebec City, and I can't remember which friend it was.
Right.
But we came out, and the boyfriend said to me, he said, "You're a scientist who has a PhD student." Mm-hmm. And he said, "Is it anything like that?" I said, "Well, first of all, there's never been any of the finding... I'm looking at memory in birds, so there's never been any of the finding, you know, that kind of thing." I said, "But there is one part in that movie that's perfect about being a scientist, and that was when the excitement that she had when she found her data." Now, her data, of course, are finding life on other... is finding life on other planets. It's not finding, "Oh, look, the Brodbeck effect is this thing." But, with memory in birds, but... it was pretty cool because the excitement she showed, and that was spot on. Like, it was dead on exactly what happens.
Right.
So that was cool. So, speaking of sidebars, sorry.
But no, that's the sidebar within a sidebar. And that's awesome because that's why we call this tangential convergence. But, but my point is that the new movie, you know, you have a long-running series that goes back to the 60s. Every now and again, you know, you throw that down that many episodes, eventually you're going to have to explain away some discrepancies that have been introduced into the storyline.
On my way.
And that's what the first movie was. And I'll say this right now. If the next movie is just an action movie and doesn't deal with issues, then it's bullshit.
Yeah.
But first movie of new series, rebooting it, they got to do what they got to do.
The funny thing with the Star Trek series, though, when you look at revolutions and counterculture and these kind of things.
Yeah, yeah.
Roddenberry, of course, was a pretty liberal guy.
Yeah,
he does
yeah.
come out of a 1950s, 1940s kind of view. And when you think about the episode where on my way, and the hippies are the bad guys.
Yes. Right. Interesting stuff. He was in the military.
Well, most of them would have been in the military.
That's why
his generation.
You know, the Enterprise, when they talk about the positions, and, you know, it's all of an American military submarine, right?
Yeah.
Hold the con. That's you know, Mr. Sulu, you have the con. The con is a control room, and that's an American Navy submarine term. And, like that. God, I'm just... Anyway. Oh dear.
You guys are geeks.
I know.
Yeah, I know.
But it's interesting that, you know, there's not... I mean, that may be an area where sci-fi, for example, and even if you look at fantasy fiction, doesn't... I mean, you have your classic, you know, protest against the king, the evil dictator, that kind of thing. But in terms of really grappling, using science fiction as a tool to grapple with some ideas around...
Right.
protests in society.
I'm gonna click my heels and jump for joy. Got a clean bill of health from Dr. McCoy.
Yes, keep going, Ken.
That's fine, episode, sorry.
I think it could be, you know, an area where, if science fiction, as Robin says, about the, you know, the science and, you know, technology as an implementation of science, then...
That's not exactly what I meant, but go ahead.
No, but I just...
Yeah, no, you know, I just, yeah.
But... it seems to me that is a genre that could tackle it. You know, it could look at the idea of protests or, you know, 1984 looks at, you know, this very dystopian future, but it looks at the sort of the futility of struggling against the system, but... You know,
so is that sci-fi or is that just a reflection of
the time? I would call it before sci-fi. I call THX 1138 sci-fi. Yeah. I would call Wii sci-fi. It's also dystopia, but...
It's sci-fi, but I guess my point is that, you know, okay, so it's sci-fi, but does it matter that it's sci-fi? Because all it's doing is repeating its, you know, the attitude at the time, which is that, you know, totalitarian regimes, well, as you said yourself, Dave, you know, imagine a future. When Uncle Joe imagines the future, it's his Cossack boot stamping on some guy's head.
Actually, I didn't say that was George Orwell, but...
I know, but that, but to reference the quote you made, right?
I mean,
that's what Orwell is thinking about. He's thinking about the communists.
Yeah.
He's thinking about Uncle Joe.
Of course he is. And, but I mean, I think the other thing we have to realize is that part of what happens with science fiction is, like with any fiction, it's affected by the zeitgeist, right? So yeah. we right. may see, because sure. of the last, because of this, what's happened now,
yeah.
and what happened 20 years ago in Eastern Europe, we may actually start to see these kind of things, where we start seeing science fiction that deals with popular, but it deals with revolution's not an uncommon theme.
No.
Except that it's always violent revolution.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the idea of popular revolution, and yeah, of course the other thing that science fiction hasn't got yet, because nobody thought about it, is the idea of social media.
Mm.
No one really got the idea that everyone would have their own fucking TV channel if they wanted one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The assumption often has been in science fiction that the government would control all your TV channels.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Exactly.
There's
no
YouTube in science fiction.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Either it would be to distract you. Yeah. I mean, you have Fahrenheit 451, you have Classic. Brave New World.
Classic.
And or just completely propagandize you like an Orwell future.
Yeah. And to bring this back to the beginning, one of the interesting things I find about Egypt and Algeria is that both governments... seeing the impact of Facebook, ended up creating their own Facebook pages.
Yeah.
Instead of trying to ban it, they started to jump on the bandwagon.
Which goes over just about as well as the bell.ca Facebook page, if you ever looked at that, or the Shaw Facebook page, the Rogers Facebook page.
Well, point taken, but at the same time, I think about...
It was like they grasped something, but...
Well, and this is the thing, right? Yeah. And I go back.
It's like Mubarak brings in, like, you know, Ahmed, who's like 23 years old, and he's a Mubarak crony. Ahmed, tell me about the Facebook. Well, we need to have our own Facebook fan site where the people who all love you, by the way, they really, really love you, can all like you. They would push a like button. Is there no love button for my giant tongue? No, we will have a page for your giant tongue.
It's crackable, right? Facebook is crackable.
Anything's crackable.
Well, everybody can see what people are saying.
But
so
the government isn't trying to crack it. They're being openly the government.
No, but I think Isabel's...
But they used to, like, censor
sure, yeah,
and
yeah.
grab them.
You can spam it, for sure.
For whatever they were saying.
You can spam it, for sure.
But I think Isabel's point is that if you post on Facebook in Iran, you might get in trouble.
But in Egypt, too, like,
exactly.
I imagine you could, and it still happens.
But I think that's not the what I'm getting to, or the point I'm getting at is, again, having, my background being history, is that, one of the cliches of, like, 20th century revolutions is, whenever you take over the government or knock the government down, the first target is the radio station.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's just like...
control, baby.
You betcha. And the point is, like, all right, so social media is out there. And let me just, as a digression here, a tangent, perhaps. When I lived in D.C., I was there for one of the big World Bank protests. And the organizers of the protest decided that they were going to get high tech on the cops. And they created a website to organize and coordinate stuff.
Right.
Goes without saying.
The cops looked at it.
You announce yourself on the internet, the information highway. The cops got guys there too. And I remember being on my bike, and I took the day off, and I was with my friends who are journalists. And we were the first big thing of the day was to shut down Independence and Constitution Ave by having bicyclists just ride down it. And there are two major arteries for people living in Virginia, which is where most people live, to come into the city.
Right.
And so they were going to totally fuck up traffic and screw everything up and throw the whole day off by shutting down Constitution and Independence. So we're on our bikes. We jump on our bikes. There's lots of people there, thousands of them. They all start off at Union Station, and we start piling down Constitution. And sure enough, the cops are there.
Of course.
Because this was on the website. And so the cops are there. What do the cops do? They go riding ahead and direct traffic, right, to stop everything while we pass through. And then they get on their bikes, overtake us, go to the next intersection, route all the traffic around. The whole thing was done in 20 minutes, and it did nothing.
You've got highly trained cops on bicycles that are actually in good shape.
Yeah.
It's DC, right?
Versus a bunch of heavy smoking hipsters on fixed gear bicycles.
right. And you know what I mean? But the whole thing was, they just made the whole thing a non-event. And because they had tapped the internet, you know what I mean?
The difference with this is, that was using it in the old style, which is take the radio station. The new style is distributed. It's Twitter.
Yeah, I thought about that too.
And that's something, the difference, and I mean, I use Twitter, I like Twitter, and Twitter also is, I just ate sandwiches. But it's got a lot of that.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, when it does get, when things really do happen, you're getting stuff, reports literally from on the ground, from people, from their phones, right?
Yeah.
Mm. And that's the difference. The it's distributed.
The immediacy of it. Yeah.
And it's distributed. And you can't shut down Twitter.
Exactly. Sure.
Well, that's whole.
Well, you can get it in Egypt, and then smart guys be like, well, we could always do a, go to a dial-up modem in Sudan.
Yeah, but, you know, and when they built the internet, they built it to be nuclear-proof.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's designed to be redundant. It's designed to be distributed. But the bottom line is...
saying the same thing all the time?
Yeah. But the thing
just
is...
watch some memes.
If the information is public, it means the security forces have access.
Of course.
And that means they can make adjustments. And that's what happened with this huge World Bank protest. Yeah. I got pictures of them. When I get the website up, flatcatblackbackpack.net, I'll put some of my pictures up. But
it's never going up.
It's going up it's next week.
Up. Even I'll bet you a dollar.
It's going up. God,
I got a shiny loonie in my pocket. It's says going up. Will it's never going go up. Live.
But I'll put my pictures up. But the thing is, the whole thing was made redundant because the cops could tap into the information highway as well as anybody else.
What are you, Al Gore with that information highway?
I'm sorry, everybody. No, I am Douglas Copeland.
Okay. Respect.
Micro Surf.
I am Micro Surf's great book.
Generation X is a great book.
Good.
It's me and my friends, it seems.
It's,
it seems to me, though, that like anything else, you can get into with a tool like that, you can get into a bit of an arms race. So at the time, they looked at the thing, and then you see something like in the UK where they're trying to prevent the police from what do they call it? What's that tactic the police have? Kettling?
Yeah.
So they have Suki.org, where it's a tool where people by distributed means like Twitter, cell phone, whatever, can say, well, this is where the cops are, and they're trying to cordon everyone off so that, that people can avoid that.
And
I imagine the next step is that the cops tap into that.
I looked at Suki, and said, two words came to my mind, South Korea.
Yeah.
Because I remember growing up, the South Koreans were considered the best at rioting. When it came down to public protests and rioting,
They did a lot of that.
They were the best.
The French are good at a good riot.
No, no, but the South Koreans were supreme.
Okay.
Because what they were doing was, and I saw a 2020 episode on it, in fact, so we know it's true.
That's true. Diane Sawyer.
But they were doing things like they would put spotters on tall buildings with walkie-talkies to keep everybody informed on where the security forces were. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they got a sniper over there. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
You know, they're just using walkie-talkies instead of Twitter. Who cares, right?
Yeah.
And, of course, it all ended because in other thing, interesting things, if you're a rider out there, you know how the cops show up with their shields and stuff? The South Koreans were showing up with their own shields. They also showed up with their own tear gas. That's awesome. but the thing is, eventually it came to an end because the cops would just, they just one-upped it.
Yep.
So the protesters got guys building tops with walkie-talkies. Cops showed up in helicopters.
That's right. They're even higher.
That's right.
They can see everyone.
Yeah, exactly. So, there's a spotter there. There's a spotter there. Why don't we arrest that guy on top of the hill or on top of that building there, because he's obviously sending instructions down to the, you know, the rioters.
But what it boils down to, though, is that it's still the people that drive it, not the...
Nah, whatever. Mm-hmm. What do you mean, the people drive what?
Well, I mean, you know, people create a website to try and do something, and police respond. And
I think you hit the nail on the head.
The technology itself will not...
The people drive it, and the cops are people, too.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, you have the protesters that are using technology in a pretty interesting way, actually.
Sure.
But when you look at it, it's just a reflection of the way that authorities have used information. Now, it's getting easier to... distribute that information, collate that information, and plan with it on both sides.
It's an arms race, man.
Yeah, it turns into an arms race.
And what that means is the technology isn't that important. The technology isn't decisive because everybody can get it. It's how you employ it.
Yeah, and it boils down to also whether or not what you said at the beginning was an 84-year-old man wants to die in his own country.
Yeah, he doesn't.
Doesn't want a bloodbath.
Yeah, he hasn't got it in him to fight these people.
Yep.
It doesn't have it in him. He's old and he's tired.
The key element, though, was for them to be able to talk to each other.
Well, that certainly helped, because that would keep people continuing to come out.
Oh, all right, sure.
If people just disappeared on day two, then he wouldn't have said, well, my son's not going to run for presidency. I'm not going to replace my vice president. So there was the ramping up and the ability of people to stay in communication and keep up the pressure was great. But I think Rob was also right that, you know, if at the end of the day he said, you know, pull the trigger and people were willing to pull the trigger.
Right. And I think that's why he backed down. I think every dictator on earth has to make that phone call. There's problems. So call the chief of the army and go, where do you stand?
Yeah.
And
they weren't going to do it.
No.
The army would not act. And he knew that. And he's an old man. And he just said, I just do not have the energy to do this. And he stepped aside, which is why, I mean, I'm not going to ring a bell for Egypt yet. They still have a lot of work to do. You know, the army is now in charge.
Oh, I don't think it's a done deal for any of the other countries.
No, emerging democracy.
It's all going to depend on what their response is.
The military is in charge. And like I said, the military has been in charge in Pakistan on this exact same basis for 10 years. Right? And for 10 years, he's been going, oh, democracy, next year. We just need to get things under control. And it's the classic thing. One thing that really inspired me, the one thing I thought was really great, was the military said, we're turning this over, we're going to reevaluate the Constitution in 10 days, which is not the kind of thing you usually hear from a military junta, right? Usually it's like, oh, it's going to take 10 years, people. It's going to take 5 years before we can sort this out. They said 10 days.
Oh, it's too early to set a date.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We can't set a date at this point. It's too early in the game.
It would be dangerous to set a date.
Exactly. There are too many people out there protesting.
First we need a series of purges.
Yes, exactly. But nevertheless, even though the fact that they said 10 days, we're passing this over to members of the Supreme Court and the members of the judiciary in 10 days.
And Egypt has had, even with the authoritarian regime, has had a tradition of a somewhat independent judiciary, even for an authoritarian regime. So
That's an American influence.
And it's a British influence.
Well, yeah.
From back in the 30s,
back for the Suez thing made everybody
okay. Yeah, well, the Suez thing.
It's France.
Of course it's France.
It's Egyptian, damn it.
That's right. This is how King Tut did it.
All I want to say is, as we wrap this one up, walk like a free Egyptian.
That's right.
All right, let's wrap this up, and we'll see
black
you next time.
Black cat, black backpack.
Black, clack, 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 clack.
Look for it in March, people.
Look for it in March of 2037.
Coming your way, 2 weeks flat.
Don't forget two weeks. Wasn't it going to be like tomorrow?
Yeah.
2 weeks flat. Now I'm talking for real.
If you want to give us a comment, please do. tangentialconvergence.com. You can also send us an email, which I do check now and then, to tconvergence@gmail.com. I still haven't properly, even it's been a year, set us all up our accounts, which are at tangentialconvergence.com. I really should probably do that, because we actually do all have Google accounts.
Yes, we can.
Yeah.
Have them all flow in.
I would love to hear people's comments. There's some. By the way, just before we go off, some of the comments from the last show that I just can't dig out my password for enough to add to the list. In terms of the whole civil disobedience thing, I hear what you're saying, Rachel. The thing is, civil disobedience is against the government. When those people boycotted those commercial websites, they were attacking a commercial entity, and so that's sort of the commercial equivalent of a boycott.
Oh, and
or of a civil disobedience.
Which perhaps could lead to another episode. We've also played with many ideas of the 10th birthday of Wikipedia.
Yes, I would love to talk about that, because that's actually Web 2.0 that Robin likes. Yeah. Aren't you intrigued?
Something Robin likes.
My God. Next time on Tangential Convergence, something Robin likes. And the tables are suddenly turned. Robin's evil twin shows up and likes things. Thanks, everybody. Thanks. Talk to you later.
Talk to you guys later. Bye.